from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, with Syria warning Israel over military aerial target attacks in recent days, we'll discuss the ongoing rise in tensions and the geopolitical threats in the region. Then we get response and analysis to the recommendation to make PG&E pay $2.25 billion for its negligence in the 2010 deadly natural gas explosion that killed 8 residents of San Bruno, injured 66, and destroyed 38 homes. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Syria responded angrily to attacks believed to be from Israel warplanes on Sunday and accused Israel of coordinating with Syrian rebel groups. Its neighbor, Iran, also warned that it would respond to the aggression, and we want to get the latest updates on what the airstrikes mean for the region in this opening Forum half-hour segment. Deborah Amos joins us from Istanbul. She is Middle East correspondent for NPR. And welcome, Deborah Amos.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you, and a really good line, I'm delighted to say. Let me just get a quick kind of taking the pulse from you. Bashar Assad indicated after these attacks, which occurred not only on Sunday but also on Friday, that there would be retaliation and pain, but he's got a civil war raging, and in the meantime, Israel's employing its Iron Dome defense. What's your sense of how much he's going to be able or willing to retaliate?
There was a lot of bluster from Damascus about retaliations. I think it's unlikely. Bashar has his hands full with an uprising in his country. However, I think you cannot downplay the importance of events over the weekend. Now we have a third country directly involved in Syria. We know that there are Hezbollah fighters in the Qusair region, which is on the Syrian side of the border, and the Hezbollah fighters have been fighting there for quite some time. It's much more public now. We know that there are Iranians who have come in as advisors. There are some reports that they are on the ground, and now we have Israel that's entered the fray.
So, excuse me, Deborah, we've got, in effect, a shadow war going on?
Well, it's hardly a shadow. That's the point. Now we see it. I think we've all been calling this a proxy war. You have rebels who are armed by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, quarters through Turkey and somewhat through Jordan. You have Bashar al-Assad backed by the Iranians and the Russians, and the opposition backed by the United States, Britain, and France. So, yes, a proxy war now, it's out of the shadows as regional actors move in, including Iraq.
And the fact of the matter is this could spill over, I assume, to involve not only Iran and Hezbollah, but who knows who else, I mean, joining in the attack. Were the aerial bombings a message to Iran and Hezbollah, perhaps?
I think it was certainly a message from the Israelis. But the Israelis are fighting a different war. They are fighting a war against Iran and against Hezbollah. The Americans have been focused on a different war, which is an uprising of the Syrian people against Bashar al-Assad. So I think we also saw that quite plainly over the weekend. Israel did something quite unusual. Usually the Israelis don't really say anything after an event like this. But what they did is they sent a very clear public message to Bashar al-Assad, which is, we are not siding with the rebels. This is about Hezbollah. We don't like the rebels any more than you do. They may be Islamist extremists, and they don't like us just like they don't like you. That's not what it was about, even though the Syrian regime tried to link the opposition with the Israeli strikes. So everybody was sending messages through the region over the weekend.
And we should mention there were 110 missiles that Israel claimed were going to Hezbollah that were precise missiles, in fact. The fact is also that there are reports, and these reports have been going on in flurries, that the United States and the West is getting closer to arming the rebels. Israel certainly, or I should say the rebels certainly probably don't want help from Israel, even though they might want help from wherever they can get it. But there's concern over, again, if U.S. Arms go to rebels, they're going to go to extremists and jihadists.
Well, I think we have not seen specifically whether the U.S. is going to arm the rebels. That is possibly rhetoric as we watch the U.S. Secretary of State in Russia. That certainly is going to be one of his talking points when he says to the Russians, you really, really need to get tougher on Syria. We need to settle this. It is regional instability that is bad for all of us. So, you know, let's see if the United States actually does arm the rebels. When you speak to Salim Idris, who is the head of the Military Council of the Free Syrian Army, these are mostly army defectors. They are considered the more moderate part of the opposition. What Idris will tell you is we can be sure. We are military people. We know how to keep our weapons safe. If we are armed, we can keep them out of the hands of extremists. I think that Washington, Paris, London still remains nervous. They are not sure if he can keep that guarantee.
Deborah Amos with us from Istanbul, Middle East correspondent for National Public Radio. What's your sense, Deb, about the fact that both sides have been essentially accused of using chemical weaponry?
Well, this was quite surprising that we had a UN investigator accuse the opposition forces of using chemical weapons, sarin in particular. I did meet with Salim Idris in Amman, and he categorically denied that the Free Syrian Army has any kind of chemical weapons or capabilities. You saw the administration very quickly discount that report. And in fact, the commission backtracked themselves. You know, Carla Del Ponte is a controversial figure, very outspoken woman. I think that we need to see what she saw before we can make a judgment on whether the rebels actually used sarin. It is the regime that is considered to be the stockpiler of chemical weapons. So it was very surprising. It was a very bad blow to the rebels. And they understood that they were being joined with Israel, accused of using chemical weapons. They were having to defend themselves. They were on the defensive for the last couple of days. And so for them, it has been a public relations disaster, these two events coming so close together.
Deborah Amos, grateful to have you with us once again on Forum. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah Amos, Middle East correspondent for NPR, joined us from Istanbul. By the way, you can join us if you have something. This is only a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to contribute or add or any questions or comments about the ongoing extremely volatile situation, not only involving Syria but now involving Israel, you may want to become part of the program. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. I want to bring Aaron David Miller into the discussion. He's Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholars with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He has advised both Republican and Democratic Secretaries of State on the Middle East, and he's in Chicago this morning. And good morning, Aaron David Miller.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here always.
Glad to have you. And let's just find out what your take is, first of all, with respect to the possibility of retaliation from Damascus.
I mean, you got three options on retaliation. The Syrians directly against the Israelis. Iran is a part of a Israeli-Iranian Cold War outside of the Middle East, since this was a message to the Iranians and to Hezbollah, and was designed to preempt and destroy surface-to-surface missiles that the Iranians are providing, or a direct across-the-border Israeli-Lebanese retaliation. Frankly, I don't see the third one. I don't think the Iranians or Hezbollah right now, they're keeping their powder dry for what I think they believe may be the ultimate conflict a year or so now, if there's no diplomacy to resolve the Iran's putative quest for a nuclear capacity. So I think that we don't want to take for granted the idea the Syrians might be compelled to respond. Don't know how many Syrian special forces troops, units were actually killed in the Israeli attack. Some, for sure. But again, why would Assad, in a desperate struggle to preserve what remains of his regime, want to encourage a direct Israeli response? It can only hurt him. Maybe a year ago, drawing the Israelis in would have worked to his advantage to rally the nation. But look, a guy who is prepared to use CW and Scud missiles on his own cities and people doesn't have much credibility left. And the arguments that used to work about the Zionist entity and the evil Israelis, frankly, don't think they work anymore.
Well, how much of this do you think may be motivated by Israel being, number one, better able to enforce red lines with, again, respect to chemical weapons, but also showing that Syria's airspace can be penetrated and air defenses can be disabled?
Let's be clear. America is the greatest and most consequential military power on earth. But we are not Israel. We do not live in that neighborhood. We are not prepared to absorb the responses. We don't, to a degree, play the games and have to deal with the complications that the locals who live there actually have to confront. So Israel can strike based on real-time intel, presumably with standoff missiles hovering over Lebanese airspace without much consequence. They can do it repeatedly, probably without a consequence. It's one thing to have the Israelis strike in defense and pursuit of what they consider to be their own legitimate interests. It's another thing to imagine a open-ended, without a strategy, military moves by the United States that is likely to draw it into a conflict and also perhaps trigger a more intensive proxy arms war with Russian acquiescence and the Iranians as well. So, no, I mean, one strike by the Israelis with Popeye missiles from Lebanon airspace is one matter. The Israelis aren't suppressing Syrian air defenses. They don't need to. Should the Americans want to set up a no-fly zone, they'd have to. So I think it really is apples and oranges, and it's a false analogy to assume, well, say, hey, look, the Israelis did it with impunity. Why can't we? We don't have a strategy that relates the use of American military power to the end game in Syria. The Israelis don't need a strategy. Their interests are protected by tactical responses to the Syrian situation, and they are not going to end up owning the country.
Is it a false analogy, Aaron, to say that this could actually follow the paradigm we saw in the opening days of the attacks of Libya?
I think there again, you know, great powers behave hypocritically and in an anomalous fashion. We can intervene in Libya, and we could choose not to intervene in Syria. Libya, we had a Security Council resolution. Libya had no air defenses, no serious military, no WMD, and no allies. Syria has all of those things. So, no, I don't think the situations are analogous at all. I think the cruel reality for Barack Obama is that doing nothing is unacceptable. Limited action will be ineffective. And the idea of a comprehensive military strategy to unseat the Assads comes with the price tag of also assuming responsibility for what America does. I my former boss, Colin Powell, I don't care what anyone says is right. You break it, and you have the responsibility for intervention, and you own it. And who is going to pay the bills? Who's going to create the stabilization force? The gazillions of dollars that are required to rebuild this country, the time it's going to take? America shouldn't be stuck with the check on this.
No, and I think the country is tired of involvements with particularly boots on the ground. But I think what you're saying, as I'm inferring from what you're saying, is that the president really doesn't have any good options here.
He doesn't, though. I really believe he's, Michael, he's going to be forced into some sort of action. He's either going to begin, if John Kerry can't produce Russian acquiescence, and it's a real long shot, Putin's acquiescence to some sort of change in Putin's position, the buy-in would be that the Russians will be in a commanding position to oversee this transition. If he can't produce something like that, then Obama is going to be forced to intercede, I suspect, limited provision of military aid. And if Assad uses chemicals again, I think the president will use tactical strikes, cruise and airstrikes against Syrian military units and air assets. But he is not, and I read this guy well on this, he has willfully avoided the slippery slope toward military engagement in Syria, and I think he will continue to do so.
And we're talking with Aaron David Miller, Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholars with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. And Listeners, we'd certainly like to hear from you. This is a half-hour segment, so you can call us and should call us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also join this conversation by going to our website and Facebook page or email us, forum@kqed.org. And we should mention that technically Israel and Syria are still at war. This could obviously, maybe already has, according to Deb Amos, spread into the region, and a lot is at stake here. It could lead to a regional war, but also we're talking about the possibility and hopes that I think our guest Aaron David Miller has just talked about with the visit Secretary of State Kerry is paying to Prime Minister Putin in Russia. Let me go to your calls, and let me begin with Ida, who is joining us from Moss Beach. Ida, morning.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask and clarify, you know, I am Syrian. I'm half Christian. I'm half Muslim. My mother's American. And I own a lot of property in Damascus, and I have a lot of refugees in my homes in Damascus. And I'm really disturbed at the ethnic cleansing that's happening in Banyas in northern Syria on the coast and in Idlib. And my brother's there also, and he's on a humanitarian mission putting prosthetic legs on so many women and children who've lost their limbs. Personally, I mean, I read all the news, and I also read it in Arabic. And a lot of the Syrians feel that we have two Satans. That's how they call them. The big Satan is Assad. And the lesser Satan, what they call, is Israel. And they're very, very clear that they'd rather have Israel come in than Assad, because look at the facts on the ground. And I don't understand why President Obama is waiting and waiting when it costs more and more to fix it.
Let me take your comments and go right to the heart, what I think is the heart of them. I mean, Aaron David Miller has already said that it's unlikely that the United States will enter this fray, although one can't tell because the president has used strong rhetoric about the red line. But Israel, you know, can certainly get more military involved in this as a surrogate. And Israel has at least put out language that suggests that they do not want to be involved, that this is not about the civil war, that it's just about eliminating those missiles. Aaron David Miller, do you see the possibility or likelihood of Israel getting more militarily involved?
I think the Israelis have gone to great lengths after, you know, at least two strikes in the last several months to avoid that. The prime minister went to China, which is an unmistakable sign that they don't see themselves on the cusp of an Armageddon-like war with Syria in the Middle East. And I think Deb's point was right about putting out public messaging that what they're interested now in is preempting arms deliveries of Fatah 110 missiles or other surface-to-surface high trajectory weapons that could endanger Israeli population centers. So no, I don't think the Israelis want to intercede. They have their own negative experience, paradoxically, with the Christian community in Lebanon. It ended in abject failure and disaster. And the last thing, it seems to me, you know, I speak as an American here, as an analyst, that any member of the Christian minority in Lebanon or Syria or anywhere in the Arab world right now would want is an overt alliance or cooperation with the Israelis. It's going to make what is already a very difficult situation for the Christian community in Syria.
And let me think.
Much more difficult.
Ida, thank you for that call. I want to get another caller on. Kenneth, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. What I'd like to put forth, hear people talk about more, is the impact of the U.S. providing purely defensive support to the Syrians, and Syrian Free Army in particular. But what if, instead of when the U.S. considered getting into a military conflict like this or supporting a side, that we don't provide arms, weapons that kill people, but instead provide body armor? We have advanced technology. It would increase our ability to produce better body armor.
Well, forgive me, Kenneth, but I think that's pretty much already the case, isn't it, Aaron David Miller?
We're doing that already. That's, communication equipment, vehicles, body armor, intelligence. You know, there is the logic that why not help the rebels help themselves? I mean, I'm compelled by that logic. I just worry and wonder what the next step is going to be, because I do not believe the kind of military equipment we're prepared to provide to these groups. What they want is anti-air and anti-armor. And we're not prepared, I think, to provide those sorts of lethal weapons in the kinds of quantities that would be necessary in order to significantly alter the military arc of the conflict.
Let me thank Kenneth for the call and go to some of your emails. Chris writes, one need not be a seer to know that this unprovoked Israeli act of war and bombing that killed dozens of people would find no opprobrium. In fact, the act is not even mildly questioned, and the only concern among the host is that Israel not be subject to retaliation. Glad that you can read my mind, Chris. Israel continues to cement itself as an international pariah for another generation. I wish we could lose them. They are not an ally of the United States. Let me read another email here from Cassidy, who says, let us never forget that Israel committed an act of war against the USA, murdered U.S. military personnel when its warplanes and torpedo boats attacked the USS Liberty on June 8, 1967. This ship's American flag was clearly visible during the attack that lasted hours. The only reason the Israelis did not sink the Liberty was that they were spotted in the act by a Russian ship. I think at this point it is a central question whether or not Damascus is going to retaliate. If there is retaliation, it could indeed inflame the whole region. But would you agree with Deb Amos, Aaron David Miller, that this is, at this point, largely bluster?
I think if the Israelis, if this becomes the attack du jour, basically, that the Israelis use the opportunity of chaos in Syria and the weakness of the regime to carry out their business, and it becomes kind of de rigueur, I mean, I think you will get a retaliation, but I think and hope that the current Israeli government, aware of the implications of repeated airstrikes, will be extremely deliberate in what they choose to do, and I don't think they want to make it any messier for the president, nor do I think they want to provide an opportunity for their own adversaries. So I suspect they'll act in a measured way. Now, a desperate leader fighting for his survival, Hafez Assad, who knows what the range of retaliatory responses might be. A Syrian military that could break down in its own command and control and authority, who knows whether somebody might just consider shelling or artillery exchanges over the Golan Heights. I don't think regional war, though, is the right way to describe what the consequences and implications are. Regional war, we've seen an Hezbollah-Israeli war already. We've seen it a couple times, actually, during the last 20 years. And it's been relatively confined, not that there weren't huge consequences. But no, I don't see a regional conflagration right now.
Aaron David Miller, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholar with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and served as advisor to both Republican and Democratic Secretaries of State. We are going into another segment. I hope you will join us for that. We're going to talk about, well, at this point, it's a recommendation of a penalty of $2.25 billion for the 2010 San Bruno gas line explosion. When we return, we'll find out more and we'll hear from you. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.